Happy Thursday. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone lines, the Twitter machine, the email device, all of the ways we have to communicate. And if you would like to communicate anytime during the next hour, please give us a ring at 414-1234, our local number. It's long distance, 800-926-8809. The email perspectives at WFSU.org. And if you prefer to tweet, please do so at WFSU Perspective. Back, first part of this month, this was the, 4th, 5th, and 6th, there was a delegation of about 60 folks from here in the Tallahassee-Leon County area that went on a sojourn to Boulder, Colorado, in the shadow of the mighty Rockies, to find out just what that community has been doing in terms of economic development and cultural enrichment and all of the other things that make a community special. Because Boulder got a major accolade here. Let's see, America's Foodiest Town. So designated back in 2010 by Bon Appetit magazine. In August of 2012, USA Today listed Boulder in its top cities for technology startups. And so there's a lot of good stuff happening out there. And we sent a delegation of local folks out to see what was going on there. And we have one of those folks who went on that sojourn with us in the form of Leon County Commissioner Kristen Dozier. Good to see you, Kristen.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for the invitation.
And so what was the best restaurant you guys ate at while you were out there?
Oh, well, I can remember the meal at Kitchen, which was very good. It was our first night, and it's, I believe, a local restaurant that now has a few branches in Colorado, and they did family-style dinners. That was, it was good, yes. I focused a little more on the presentations, so I don't remember many of the other meals.
Well, foodiest will leave to the gastronomes in the delegation. We'll talk to them a little bit later. But at the same time you guys were out there, out comes this New York Times article with a research done by two Harvard folks saying that when it comes to upward mobility, Leon County may not be the gold standard, or maybe not even the tin standard, because of all of the different impediments to upward mobility that we have in this town. And that's where our other guest comes in. That is Tim Center, who is the executive director of the Capital Area Community Action Agency, on the road attending a conference in Orlando. Tim, I think you were kind of drawn into that discussion, weren't you?
Not of our doing, but yes, I think the timing of the visit and the timing of the report put in a great image of the difference between the resource community and the unresourced community, and the struggles that the unresourced community has in being able to get ahead, to move up. Which I think is the sentiment of the American dream, and what we hope for most folks is the ability to rise above difficult situations and be able to participate in the economy. And it's all economic development, and it's just two different sides of the coin.
From the perspective of Community Action Agency, since that is the base that you folks work with day in and day out, did that report by the researchers surprise you in any way?
Not really, and I think that the issue is that for many years we can take a look at Tallahassee and know that there are some communities in Tallahassee that continue to struggle, and we've watched as efforts are underway to try to revitalize Frenchtown, for example, or to look at what is taking place in the south side of Leon County, and I think that. The nice part about it was kind of unfortunate the way the whole thing arose, I guess, but it did get people talking. And I think that once we get people talking about this issue of income mobility and then asking the question, how best can we perhaps help move people up the economic ladder, that we're in a much stronger position as a community as a whole working together.
Okay, we want to get into maybe drawing the sourced and the unsourced parts of the community a little bit closer together as we go through the program today. But if I could ask County Commissioner Kristen Dozier, top of line, what did you guys pull out of Boulder? I mean, is this the nirvana that some folks had said going in that, oh, we must emulate these folks because they know how to do it right?
Well, I think that is a very interesting question. And I have to say that 2 weeks prior to this trip, I was on a trip through the Midwest with a delegation chosen by the Department of Commerce, looking at the same type of sites and communities focused on entrepreneur and commercialization. So I got a really broad array of examples over 3 weeks' time. Boulder has some very good things going for it. I mean, it is a beautiful place to live. It's very attractive. It's close to Denver. They've got a lot of resources that, frankly, we might not have in Leon County. They do have a really strong entrepreneurial community. At the university, there's close ties between the startup community and the university. We saw some of those examples. For me, though, it was a perspective of looking at a community that is 20 or 40 years down the line from where I think we are at this point. We won't have an accelerator with an $11 million investment fund immediately. It's not going to happen. We got to build our way there. So some of it was looking at those opportunities that might be on down the line, thinking that we really are on the right track. There can be a stronger connection, should be, between the universities and our startup community, and really growing good jobs for all different education levels, income levels across our community. Having said that, really for me, my biggest takeaway was lessons learned. They did not collaborate as much as they should between the environmental, the planning perspective, the business, the university perspective over these years. And you can see the fault lines between these different groups even today. And I think it creates some inertia. So while they have a national lab, IBM, these huge assets that really built the base of the community, I think we are actually in a better place looking at our planning, our land development to address some of the issues you just talked about with Tim, but also to lay the foundation for a stronger community in the future. So I asked a lot of questions and paid attention to the problems that currently exist and thinking about how to get ahead of those in our early stages.
Okay. And Tim Center, how can those sorts of considerations when you're looking at entrepreneurial development, more collaboration between academia and entrepreneurs and all that, how do you get that down to places like, you know, Basin Street and Joe Lewis Street and some of the client bases that you deal with the community action folks?
Sure. So, you know, the nice thing is that we have in Tallahassee, at least, some resources that can come to play here. You've got community action and some of the case management that we do in terms of working with people, families in poverty to help them define what their future story might be and then help them realize that through education and job training. And then the job training part is really picked up in large part by the good folks over at CareerSource of Capital Region, who have the U.S. Department of Labor funds that come down to help folks who are unemployed become employed and help employers find those qualified staff to ramp up. The trick, though, is I think is probably bridging the gap between the two communities that we probably have in Tallahassee. There are kind of two communities, and this goes to a bit of the issues of University of Toronto and Richard Florida's work that talked about economic segregation, that we have the haves and the have-nots, or the resourced and the unresourced, and they kind of live in different parts of the community. And we don't make it easy for the two sides to talk with each other. And so I think that in a collaborative manner, if you had the Economic Development Council and the Chamber beginning to work with the social service agencies and others who are in the economic development field, just not seen as a traditional economic development issue, then we can have, I think, a better approach of getting into the South City, to getting into some of these housing complexes, to alert people to new opportunities, to get them a chance to think differently about their current situation, and then and go forward from there. we have a program at Community Action called Getting Ahead in a Just Getting By World. And that program has been very effective in taking individuals who have determined on their own that they want to change their circumstance to understand kind of the rules of life and how our community works. And once they get that understanding, a whole new world is opened up for them, so they can pursue entrepreneurial opportunities, or they can pursue the education or job training to pursue a career that they want to, as opposed to just taking whatever job is available. And it requires that sort of comprehensive nature of helping people begin to see a different horizon before they embark on the steps that will be necessary to get them out of poverty. The next stage of that is that we need to have mentors that come in from the resource community, middle-class folks who are just willing to talk to a person who's trying to get ahead and share with them, you know, advice. You know, a person who's saved up a little bit of money, you know, wants to open a bank account, who do you bank with? And all of a sudden you go, well, I know somebody at a bank or my credit union. Why don't you come over here and let me connect you? Or I'm interviewing for this job at this company or with this organization. Oh, I know somebody over there. Can I put in a good word for you? These sorts of bridging the gaps between the two communities, it will be vital to us being able to really move us forward and to realize the fullest potential of the types of ideas that come out of cities like Boulder. So that's, I think, it's a comprehensive, holistic sort of thing, and everybody in the same boat. We're all in the same direction.
Let's continue that thread here right after the upcoming break, and we invite your participation, too, as we talk about not only, I guess we can call this Boulder and Beyond. How does that sound?
There you go.
I didn't even come up with a title for this program going in, but that would seem to be about as apt as anything. As we talk with Leon County Commissioner Kristen Dozier and also Tim Center, who is Executive Director of the Capital Area Community Action Agency here on Perspectives. You can join the conversation at 414-1234 local, 800-926-8809 long distance, or zip us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We shall return. Back on Perspectives, talking about income inequality and economic development and promoting entrepreneurship and creating jobs and all that. Oh, by the way, just to let you guys know, coming up next week, we will be talking about something that Tim Center mentioned just a moment ago, the Startup Quest, which is the Capital Region Career Source folks, and there's some federal money involved there and some other things, and we'll get into that next week right here on Perspectives. Leon County Commissioner Kristen Dozier, you want to pick up on Tim Center's thing about that whole income inequality, the two sometimes multiple types of neighborhoods and communities we need to knit together. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, Tim hit on a very important point, that the traditional way we thought about economic development has completely changed. And I think a lot of us in this community have really moved to a different position, and I'm hopeful that the conversation will keep going from here. And what I mean by that is, it's not just about recruiting a business from outside in the same way that every other community in the Southeast does. We have not had much success on that. We need to think about our economic development holistically. If we don't have a good, educated workforce, quality neighborhoods where everyone in the community across Leon County and our region, our surrounding counties as well, because the Harvard study really shows that it's not just Leon County. We were highlighted, but it's the region. It's the Southeast. That everyone has a chance to build the capabilities necessary to have fulfill their own life ambitions, to participate in life. This is how we get participation in democracy in our communities, giving back. This is the vital, you know, just soul of our community, and we cannot forget that. But it is tied in directly with, I believe, infrastructure improvements, improving the quality of life on the South Side and other areas of the community. It's tied in with diversifying our economy. My entire life, we've talked about the lack of diversity in our economy. We've seen state jobs slowly whittled away for more than a decade, probably two. And we have never focused on our true assets, which, in my opinion, and a lot of people's opinion, is the research and technology coming out of our universities. And a lot of people think that this can only build high-wage jobs, but it's not true. If we focus, for example, on what is happening at the Mag Lab, look at, really drill down, identify what our assets are that are unique to this community, maybe the research into MRIs, and then target companies. Gary Ostrander, the VP of Research at FSU, mentioned this example. Target companies that are focused on that type of technology for manufacturing jobs, for research and development, we can grow jobs in our community for all different education levels. And so there is a continuum here, in my opinion, from the education, the life skills that Tim is talking about, that his agency and others work so diligently to help people in our community, connected with higher ed, with our Leon County school system, internships, trades, career source, all of these different types of things that help people break into the workforce. But if we don't have jobs for those people to get in our community, it doesn't matter. We need good jobs in a diversified economy that are stable, that allow for continued upward mobility. Someone who could be trained in advanced manufacturing with a high school diploma or a two-year degree could get a job in a manufacturer plant and continue to move up without ever having to go to a four-year school. These are the types of things we need to look at to really break through. And while I'm fearful that the Boulder trip and the Harvard study and some of these other things happening at once will once again separate us in our community. They will drive wedges apart. Some people focus on only a few areas, either on the economic development side or the human service side, as ways to address this. I am very optimistic that we can get to a place where we're looking at this holistically, and that's the only way to solve the problems.
Was looking at another example of this that, Commissioner, you were part of here recently, the most recent spotlight made in Tallahassee business, Dan Foster, TurboCore, which very, very uber, super duper high tech and very cool. But you get out on the manufacturing floor and not everyone who's on the line has an advanced degree. There were all kinds of different jobs as part of that manufacturing process.
You are absolutely right. And I actually agree with those who say Danfoss was a win a long time ago, and it's rather unfortunate that we keep going back to Danfoss as a win because we haven't attracted another manufacturer since. But you just hit on that point. We need to get smarter, know our assets, have better collaboration among all facets in our community if we're going to attract more companies like Danfoss. And the kicker is, when you talk to the folks over at Danfoss, they don't fear that. They don't fear competition from other manufacturers. In fact, they believe recruitment and job training and building the skill set in our community to really support their business long term and expansion will be improved if they have other manufacturers of a similar type in our community. So this is a win-win. It's for the existing businesses, but also for the individuals who could finally get into that upward mobility track. We can't ignore any of the problems that came out in the study. We know they're here. We just have to think very creatively about how to address them.
And Tim Center, what does that mean as far as so many of the clients of Community Action if there were a greater availability of these kinds of jobs? Again, not saying, oh, you have to go and get a master's or a doctorate degree in order to get a job in Tallahassee, but there are things that would be available at the level of a high school diploma or a little bit of technical training on top of that.
Yeah, Kristen speaks very, very well about these issues, and I appreciate her a lot and all of her efforts. The great thing is what we come up with is this chicken and the egg sort of thing, which is going to come first here because, you know, we need jobs. But then in order to have jobs, you need to have a skilled workforce. In order to have a skilled workforce, you need jobs. And it's a very neat cycle there. and working together with the universities and working together with some of the larger employers who want to expand or can bring in other businesses and diversify, we need to be working together there. The real thing here, and just for a second, maybe for the audience to understand, you know, what we're looking at in our community as a whole. You know, poverty by itself is a single line that's about $20,000 for a family of three. And in Leon County, it's about 22% of the population, 22% of our neighbors are living in or at or below the poverty line. But then we've got folks who are not eligible for public assistance, who are working, who are struggling by paycheck to paycheck, and some might call them the working poor. The United Way did a fantastic research study with Rutgers University that talks about the asset-limited, income-constrained, employed population in our community. They have no savings, their job is not really promotable, but they are working. That population accounts for about 25% of our residents. So you put together the 22 and the 25%, and you're at 47% of our community is not making enough money to make do on what would be a basic cost of living survival budget that just takes into account the issues of housing and childcare, food, transportation, and healthcare. And when you've got a 50-50 community, we have some very, very significant challenges. Part of that is education at the earliest level. And, you know, in education, we tend to double down on those who are doing great. And we tend not to make big investments in those places that are struggling. And we probably need to rethink that strategy. We probably need to put more resources and not, I'm not meaning allocating more resources that's already there. I'm not talking about new taxes here. But talking about prioritizing where we're investing our dollars for the population that live in Southside, you know, I think we need to come together, work together as a community to encourage folks to think about creating jobs where they can. And there's a lot of things that people can do that on their own. It's a lot of service-based economy jobs, but those that can actually make a living, everything from landscaping to house cleaning, to salon work and more, that begins the process of getting people into the habit of providing for themselves and for their family, which raises people's self-esteem and breathes you know, a really positive image into a family that can provide for itself. And groups like Community Action, which have a lot of resources, to help in that area, along with groups like Salvation Army, Goodwill. We have a lot of resources out here if we were all working together. And when you get groups that work together, you get a program like the Kearney Center. I think that's a great example of where the community came together as a whole and said we need to do something and tackle the issue of homelessness. Probably a couple hundred folks and probably 50 different organizations all worked hand in hand together to create a very comprehensive way to address a very difficult problem. And I think we probably need to do the similar sort of thing with the issue of poverty and the working poor and economic development.
As Commissioner Dozier said, that's something that even Boulder doesn't seem to be able to do, maybe in some ways quite as well as we can when we really set our minds to it. When there's a community problem like that and you get those walls of the silos to come down, everyone pulls together and boom, miracles happen.
You know, I actually used the example of the Kearney Center when I was on the ACE trip, which was the American Competitiveness Exchange that I went on a few weeks ago, talking to some folks from from Birmingham. And it was an example of, and Tim's exactly right, a point in time where things really could have blown up. We could have seen a fracture in the volunteers in the human service community and others who were focused on homelessness. And instead, it was an opportunity not just to come together to solve those existing problems, but take a completely different view of the homelessness issue. And of course, we'd already seen a leading edge of this with the Renaissance Center that Rick Kearney had built behind the shelter, bringing so many of our human service agencies together under one roof so the accessibility of folks who are facing homelessness could go in and get all of the resources at once. They didn't have to drive all the way around town. Just that form of collaboration made a huge difference. Move that to the center that's now open, and there are phenomenally unique elements in that center that people who are visiting from around the state and other places are really surprised by, but encouraged that we are not just housing homeless. We are getting people the resources they need so they can build the capabilities to pull themselves out and live the lives that they want to live and be full members of our community. I did want to go back to something else that Tim said, though, about the education issues and those types of things. I think that, you know, we've been rather distracted talking about the school system for a lot of different issues in the last year. And that's unfortunate because there's some really interesting conversations going on right now about testing, about internships, about the trades. You know, I was in construction industry for a long time. Some of the best jobs you can get, and thankfully the construction industry is booming right now and it actually needs a lot of good skilled workers to come back into that industry post-recession. But we need training programs so people can get their electrical license or plumbing or something like that. These are great jobs. They raised me. You know, they provide a good quality of life, not super rich, but, you know, it's a good, stable life. And I think programs like Leon Works, Chairman Marianne Lindley started that this year, trying to bring all the different people together who are focused on these areas of really connecting our education through the continuum to workforce training, whether people choose to go into a four-year or choose to go into the trades or something else. We need to really talk to our young people about all of the different opportunities we've had. We took a long time separating, kind of devaluing the trades. That's no longer the case. People are extremely happy when they have, you know, a really great lawn care company, or, you know, some of the most creative businesses I know in town are salons or other things like that. And they employ a large number of people in our community who are really vital members. And we need to focus on that as a key part of our economic development and not just, you know, the more traditional, very large businesses and things of that nature.
Some phone calls stacking up here on Perspectives, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Jason has been patiently awaiting on line two. Hi, Jason. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, first off, I want to give you all a standing ovation applause for this project and for this dialogue. I am a Tallahassee native in my early 40s, and I've been here, you know, since 1975, though I've left for a period. And this is just an extraordinary project. Thank you to all of you.
Well, thank you for your input. What do you think?
Well, here's my sort of, I would say, prompt. I am a theater director and filmmaker, musician-type guy. I did both of my degrees at Florida State. And during my time at Florida State, I actually did an internship at UC Boulder. And I spent some time in that world. And, of course, I was coming from Tallahassee. I was coming from this perspective. And I think at core, I've realized in many ways I'm a very provincial person. So it was a fascinating experience. I guess what I learned, that the commonality between the two communities, and this is what I'd like to have each of you, if you would, just fractal on, you know, just kind of spitball on, is the notion of you're creating places where large groups of human beings relative to other places, I think, are doing work that's coming right out of their sort of soul, I suppose, and they're painting stuff, and they're making music, and they're making films, and in an abundance post-scarcity economic paradigm, there's no way to monetize it. So all those freaky people, right, all the creatives, they're needing the jobs just as well. And I guess I'm curious, is how do we create a new kind of paradigm here in Tallahassee where we acknowledge that we've got artists who've got a lot of skills, but what they really are passionate about is their art. And how do those things merge? Because I've been playing blues guitar for 30 years, and I can't get even my mom to listen to my music. You know what I mean? There's no income in what we love to do. But there are, if you can create a new scarcity, new kinds of economic games that can be played. So if people turn on the internet now and they expect to get music for free, just like it's coming out of a tap, now artists, for example, bands and artists, they make money on T-shirts. They make money on, right, the things that they can create, that they can imagine, that become scarcity games. So could I just put that in y'all's lap and you could just go forth, and I just love to hear anything you have to say.
Great.
About any of that kind of stuff.
Certainly, Jason. Thank you so much for the input there. Yeah, I think a lot of creative types, they wind up in Austin for some reason or another, but there's no reason why the same thing couldn't happen here. Since Commissioner Dozier had just had a comment, how about Tim Center? What do you think? And that's another, I guess, misperception, Tim, where you're, poor people aren't interested in the arts. Lower income neighborhoods, they're just trying to eke out existence, and culture doesn't mean anything to them.
Nothing could be further from the truth. And in fact, we probably have a lot of our culture is the result of the African American community, a result of folks who came out of rural places and not with tremendous resources. I think when you talk about placemaking, and that's, I think, what's taking place in Tallahassee now with the development of Midtown and the encouragement of Gaines Street and Cascades Park is part of this effort. The idea that we can become very effective by fostering the creative communities that are there and other businesses to take advantage of those creative communities. I think when you take a look around Cascades Park, there's a desire from some to begin to look at creating an arts district, kind of a subset of the community there, right outside Myers Park, and that would be an opportunity to promote the arts and give more people an opportunity. The other part of this is that, and I think Jason kind of gets to this issue, which is, where do the creatives fit overall? And that goes to the larger issue of how the economy is really shaping up. I mean, we're going through the massive change of moving from, we went from the agrarian to the industrial to the knowledge and knowledge-based economy. And now we've got this entire thing of what does a knowledge-based economy look like? And it's a lot of free-wielding independence and people, working collaboratively and independently on their own, but collaboratively with others. And so we've got to also be aware of when we foster economic development to permit those sorts of businesses, those sorts of entrepreneurial activities to come up. And that's where you get like the Domi Station that encourages that type of fosters that type of behavior.
Let's talk a little bit more about that in just a moment here on Perspectives. We'll be right back. We are back on Perspectives Boulder and Beyond. We have dubbed this program here talking about the recent trip to Boulder by about 60 different folks from Tallahassee, Leon County on a fact-finding mission that they're talking about cultural and economic development, and then also some recent surveys showing that we may lack in the upward mobility department. But following up on monetizing culture, which has never been easy in a town that has probably fewer live music venues per capita than any other college town in the country.
But changing rapidly,
yes. Ms. Dozier. So, yes. So how do we do that? How do we take all this hotbed of seething creativity and actually make a few bucks off of it?
Well, I love Jason's question because I think it goes to the holistic nature of economic development that I was talking about before. Someone from FSU once said to me that in this community, we actually produce more copyrighted material than patents. Now, I think the patents are getting up there, but the novel that's written, the short story, the song, something like that, we have an incredibly creative community. These people are entrepreneurs, period. And I think that what Coca's doing, what Tim mentioned, the ideas about doing an arts district around Cascades, and that's really our arts, culture, and heritage focus of the whole park, could really help us expand some entrepreneurial resources for that creative group of artists in all different fields. Master Craftsman is doing this and kind of connecting the more industrial material with a real artisan perspective, and that would be really interesting. But I want to tie it in also, and I've been here as long as Jason has, we're probably around the same age, that a more creative community with more resources. There's more to do in this town now than there has ever been in my life, right? There are more places to go, but more private businesses where people don't go to the chains as much anymore, quite frankly, because there's so many different options for really unique private business. You're supporting a neighbor when you go into one of those businesses on the South Side, in Midtown, anywhere. that's someone's family. That's their business. But it also helps in recruitment. When we're looking for new professors, new doctors, others, they want to see a vibrant community so we can attract more people to our community to really build the economy. But the other piece of it is that I think is really important. We need those collision spaces. This is a term of, you know, art that's getting in there. I think Cascades is a brilliant example. You drive by any time of day, and I would argue it's the most diverse place in our community. People from all over. You will see every different demographic out there. And when we have events, you're really seeing that diversity as well. You know, maybe the concerts lend themselves to one genre or another, but we are seeing a place where our whole community can come together. Southside Arts Complex, further down Monroe Street, bringing kids in to do different types of projects. A whole child is working down there. We're focused on South City. All these things are connected, and I think that he brings up a really good example of why we have to think about these things holistically.
How do we break down some other barriers? And George, I see you popping up there. We'll get to you in just a second. Please hang on. When it comes to that other half of the community that Tim was talking about that fall down either close to or below the poverty line, that is so disaffected, so disconnected that you talk about Cascades Park or Domey or Innovation Park or any of these other developments that really have a lot of potential for long-term and pretty diversified good, but they're saying it has nothing to do with me. It's the folks at the top that are getting all the resources, getting all of the CRA money, whatever that might happen to be, and they still feel disconnected. Tim, how do you connect and say, hey, you're in on this too, and you need to be a part of the planning and the organization for this whole thing?
Well, I think some of the work that Courtney Atkins is doing in the South Side is South City. It is the sort of thing where you plant yourself there. You become a part of the community, and you're not an outsider that comes in and says, here's what you need to do. We need to be in a place where we create safe places for folks to feel like they're participating in their community. And many times, I think people are either isolating themselves or in both sets of communities, by the way, or just don't know how to do this. And I think we've got a lot of folks out there. The mayor's got a great track record of this, and I think we have others who can come together and let's go talk to folks. You know, one of the things, and I loved Kristen's point about Cascades Park. It is an incredibly diverse population, 30 to 40 people in the park any given day, hour of the day, all different races and ages. And the great thing about that is probably its location, which is that bridge between the south side and the north side. The community, and it's accessible and it's open and people feel like they're welcome there, and that's the sort of culture I think we'd like to think we're a very hospitable and a very collaborative sort of community. But we need to get more folks together. Village Square does a good job of this, bringing folks together, and I think that we just need more of those types of efforts in the communities that need it the most.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of some tangible kinds of things, such as the demise of the Harveys on the south side. And immediately a hue and cry went up around the community saying, we need to bring in another grocery store. And yet we have all these resources in the community, whether it's the FAMU Small Business Institute. There's all kinds of federal grant money available that is an enterprise zone. That a group of people right here in town couldn't get together and say, let's open a supermarket. What a concept.
Well, I think you hit on a key point in all of this. We are not alone. Income mobility is a challenge across the country. And with the Harveys example, we were facing something where Harveys was bought by Winn-Dixie. They shut it down. There's a Winn-Dixie just up the road. But the Harveys was really the community store. Well, Winn-Dixie says you can't put another grocery store into that spot. So there's other corporate practices, other challenges that we're facing. But at the same time, there are a lot of conversations going on about how to address that. The food desert issue is big. The county's sustainability summit this year was entirely about food issues. And if we look over at Frenchtown, the Frenchtown Farmers Market, which is a partnership between, and let's be honest, Jim Bellamy has been amazing. He's the first one to get SNAP benefits at a farmers market. We talk about lack of access to good, healthy food. He did that. He pulled that off. And he's partnered with a group from KCCI to focus on this farmers market. But then the CRA gets involved and they'll actually be a building. They can, you know, refrigerate things, stuff like that. We need to get creative. We have outside challenges, corporate practices, inertia, frankly, at the state and federal level, and a lot of really entrenched self-segregation, economic segregation that has happened that we have to tackle. I think we're best capable of doing that from the ground up. To one other quick point, I share the frustration of a lot of people's that a lot of people have shared with me about maybe some inertia in the past or different set of priorities, maybe from the CRA or some other organizations. I think in the last few years, the CRA, for example, has really focused on getting a proactive strategic planning process and investment program in place that really will direct the right kind of investment to Southside and Frenchtown and help us be more collaborative. There's still a lot of frustration in the room because we haven't seen the money going into the communities as much as we have, say, Gaines Street, but it's happening. And I share the frustration with people on the Southside who say, you know, all the development's going in someplace else. It has been going in someplace else for a long time, but with FAMU Way, with the continuation of Cascades Trails all the way down to Lake Bradford, with the sales tax extension, I just did a presentation for the Innovation Park Board a few weeks ago, or a month and a half ago, that showed all of the different infrastructure projects kind of in concentric circles moving in towards Innovation Park, and it is transformative to the Southside region. I've been talking to Towsie Builders Association, builders and contractors. When they say there's no lots to build on, why not affordable housing in Southside? It's about to expand into a really attractive place to live if we have a more diverse community, we get more people into the schools, things like that. I think it will help, but, and I have a huge but there, the cultural assets we have on the South Side, people who have been there forever, we cannot lose that. And we have to focus on that as much. And going back to Boulder, that's the lessons learned. You have to pay attention to these things as we lead into them, not look at the problems in hindsight 40 years later.
You talk about a juggling act. Well, speaking of diversity, George joins us here on the line. Hey, George, thank you so much for hanging on. Appreciate your patience. Welcome to Perspectives. I think George is still here. If not, I certainly understand. Okay. George did have a question. Wanted to know about opportunities for people with disabilities. George has a visual challenge, and there are many other folks in the community that also are challenged in different ways. Tim Center, talk about Community Action Agency and what you folks do as far as helping to address those sorts of needs and concerns.
Sure, and I appreciate that opportunity. Just real quickly, for folks who are not familiar with Community Action, during the Great Society effort in 1964 under the Johnson administration, the federal safety net was put in place, authorizing the creation of, at the ground level, community action agencies to help address the needs of people in poverty and help them get out of poverty. And so we offer the ability to help people who are economically disadvantaged and lack the income to pay their utility bill every now and then. So we paid about 14,000 utility bills last year alone. And we have programs that are designed to help get people's homes more energy efficient so they don't have to come in for that type of assistance. And we add insulation and change out windows and stuff of that nature, no cost to the homeowner or the renter. And then we also have Head Start in three communities, including Leon County, more than 200 children who are born into families with low incomes, and helping them get ready for kindergarten. It's a very robust pre-K program that provides overlay services, including meals, to help get them ready for to compete against kids coming from resource families. And then we have programs that are designed to help get people out of poverty. We call that our Getting Ahead program. And Getting Ahead and Staying Ahead, where we offer the opportunity to be mentored by folks in the middle class. As it relates to disabilities, disabilities provide a very unique set of challenges, and some groups in town are better able to do those than perhaps we are, but we would work in conjunction with Ability First. We work in conjunction with Goodwill, which has done a tremendous job of creating opportunities and enabling and empowering folks who might struggle with a disability to be able to find gainful employment and become contributing in a way that they feel that they're a part of the community. And so I would encourage folks to talk to those folks, because they're also working with groups like TCC, Workforce Institute there, and working with Lively and working with CareerSource to find the right placement, the right opportunity for people, depending on your skill set.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Well, let's drill down, because George has now rejoined us there. Hey, George, welcome back.
I'm sorry about that. I couldn't hear you on the phone. I wanted to ask Commissioner Dozier a question and make a comment about something that Mr. Center said. I wanted to ask the commissioner if she noticed any improvements that she saw out in Boulder that would be applicable to Tallahassee for disabled individuals. And the other comment that I wanted to make with reference to Mr. Center is that I see people at FSU, and as you know, Tom, in 15 minutes I'm gone, for whatever happens. But it really discourages me to think that there are people that work for the state of Florida and for a major university who do not make sufficient money that they have to be on public assistance.
George, thank you very much. And again, I appreciate your listenership and friendship for these many years. Commissioner Dozier, what do you think?
Well, George, thanks for your question. I can't say that I saw anything specific in Boulder, but I think you bring up a crucial point. And just picking up on what Tim said before you jumped on the line, Ability First and other organizations, and I think of Ability First initially, because they are trying to do employer education as well. I spoke once in front of a group talking about chronic pain, which is something that I have dealt with. And I think this is a mindset change in a way. As Tim said before, we're moving into the knowledge economy. We're trying to figure out how that works. With new technology, with new resources, with a better understanding, it doesn't matter, or some of the disabilities that we thought were really, might prevent someone from moving through different employment opportunities, I don't think they exist any longer. But part of this is training employers to have a different perspective. From my perspective, someone with chronic pain might just need a stand-up desk. They might need to move around a little bit more, something like that. That's what I was talking about at Ability First. So it's really looking at employees in a very different way, looking at voice technology, something like that, to help fit really creative, innovative people who have all different sets of abilities into our employment base throughout the community. So I think, while I didn't see any examples, George brings up a really good point, and it fits into this whole conversation that we're having. The other thing that he talked about is very important as well, and we touched on this earlier. Those who are working but living paycheck to paycheck do not have enough to cover their basic expenses, and much less an emergency that comes up that we all know we could face. That can lead itself to a spiral that really takes a family down and honestly cost our community so much more, because then that person is going into the human service sector trying to get the assistance. We're doing grants. We're doing other things. Tim's group's getting involved. If we can have a community where someone who is working actually has a living wage, we will actually save ourselves money in the future. This is the different way we need to think about the connection between economic development, education, workforce tracing, all these different perspectives.
And not looking at it so much as the top-down thing that you had referenced earlier, that, oh, we bring in this company and there'll be all kinds of opportunities to recoup some of that investment through licenses to the universities,
right,
for, whatever.
This is important to do. We need to do all pieces of this, because focusing on the university research is good. But what I learned on the ACE trip, there are so many tools to map our existing and emerging clusters. What are our real assets? Do a strategic plan. There are examples of this across the country for our regional economic development, and really identify what we've got going for us. We can't be anybody else. And quite frankly, I don't want to be anyone else. I like Tallahassee. I want to make it, and Leon County in the region, I want to make it as best as we can for everyone. To do that, we got to focus on what we've already got here, and we've got an incredible array of assets We really just have to move the ball forward.
Tim Center, from your viewpoint there at Community Action, as a follow-up to some of these things we were talking about, what do you think should be like our top five priorities as far as the people served by your agency and others in the area?
Oh, gosh, if I was king for the day sort of thing.
Yeah.
What a wonderful opportunity, and one that I would love to give more thought to. I think one of the biggest things is somehow I'd like everybody to somehow walk in each other's shoes for a moment and get that chance to kind of see what folks are going through. I'd love for the social services to not just be seen as a social service, but as a part of the economic development formula, and for them to be at the table with the Economic Development Council, which I don't necessarily think they are. I'd love to see, much like the work at the Kearney Center or a Whole Child Leon approach, to perhaps having a whole community approach here. Hats off to the folks who led the Imagine Tallahassee effort during the conversations regarding the sales tax extension. But we need something like that again, which was very instrumental in bringing together spirit groups to talk about a common vision.
Oh, Tim, I think that's just about going to wrap it. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but have a safe visit to Orlando for that conference. And thanks so much for joining the conversation. And Leon County Commissioner Christian Dozier, is always good to see you.
You too. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Sawyer Vanderwerf. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Catch you next week.
Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.